Okay, so today we're going to talk about prejudice a little bit. We actually won't get to talking too much about prejudice, probably. As you know is the case, I like to do a lot of background material, stuff that's not in the textbook, but I think that's important for understanding the concepts that we're dealing with in what the textbook is talking about. First, any questions or things you want to talk more about in terms of prejudice? Okay. Let me put this, let me set some context here. This was an event that occurred on Monday night, I think. Monday or Sunday. Just a couple days ago.
The burned images of a cross and the letters KKK are still visible on a West Medford lawn.
Leaving a family of four worried about their safety. Now Medford police are investigating the possible hate crime.
And they're asking anyone with any information to come forward. The incident happened just after 11 o'clock last night. The victims say the homemade explosive device was left in the middle of their lawn with symbols of the Ku Klux Klan going up in flames.
As soon as I get out of my porch, I see the letters. Burning up KKK and then a big cross, and it was just, I was like, this is not happening, not to us, this is not happening.
Jonathan and Sol White and their two daughters, aged 4 and 2, have lived in Medford for years. Never has this small family been victims to racial intimidation.
It makes me feel real bad, you know. I want to say I'm scared, but then I can't be, because wherever you go, things happen the same way. But I feel really bad.
One neighbor says just after 11 on Monday night, a group of three men stopped in front of the white West Medford home.
They were already standing in the lawn, and I just saw one guy come walk into the lawn and drop something. And it shattered, and then flames just went up.
Justin followed the men for a few blocks before he was caught
crying.
Neighbors stopped by throughout the day to talk with the whites and share their own concerns.
I honestly don't know what to think. I never ever thought I would be living in a place that would have this type of behavior. Let's say I'd never choose to live in a place like that.
Other neighbors say they aren't concerned about their safety, but for the safety of the kids who play in and around the neighborhood.
I have my kids ride up and down here all day long, every day, and they're biracial too. So I'm kind of scared. But that is ignorant, and I think that they need to grow up, and, you know, it's time for unity instead of all this separation.
Another homemade explosive device was also detonated on the front step of another Medford home, and about an hour before the hate crime happened, Medford police are now investigating whether those two crimes are related.
So there you go. Any comments about that?
I just moved back from Medford, actually. I lived there for almost 5 years, and it doesn't really surprise me.
Okay, it doesn't surprise you because of the character. Tell me more about why it doesn't surprise you that it would happen in, you know, a country that prides itself in egalitarianism.
Medford's kind of a redneck place.
Okay.
It's super, like, it's growing, and a lot of Californians are moving there, and it's getting a little, I guess you could say, progressive in ways, but it's still, like, down home, redneck. It's, I don't know.
Okay. And, hold on a second. And so what do you propose... What would you propose sort of keeps a place down home redneck? Why does it stay that way? Yeah.
The people.
Hold on a second. What's that?
There's just a lot of farms in Medford.
Farms. So farmers are down home. So farmers are down home rednecks.
Well, it tends to be a more conservative town.
Okay.
So it's interesting. Like Ashland, I'm from Ashland, which is like
Okay, so so we generally tend to associate rural, more rural towns, more farm-based towns with conservative political ideas. But certainly, I wouldn't associate racism with conservatism, although I'll tell you a little bit about how there is a connection. But what else? Yeah, I saw Shailene first. Okay.
So there's still those members from the KKK in the 50s that are still like teaching their kids.
Okay.
Racism.
Okay. So the Oregon and the Northwest in general has had a sort of history of a culture of separatism and maybe white supremacy. You know, we could probably find evidence for that. Hold on a second. I saw Remy first.
Anyway, I agree with what you say about separatism, and I think that's the key to reducing prejudice. You know, because I've always said, especially from my experience, but I mean globally too, that people are afraid of what they don't understand. But racism, as we understand it, usually comes from fear.
Okay.
And fear is from what they don't understand. But when there's a lot of integration and getting to know people on a personal basis, then they begin to see people as individuals and not as stereotypes.
Okay, so so let's unpack. There's a lot in there. Let's unpack some of it. So first of all, you know, we generally aren't surprised about Medford. Oh, it's those people in Medford, right? But we don't forget that. You know, don't forget that just last year there was you know, a major gathering of white supremacist groups here in Portland, and it was closely monitored by police and just to make sure that it didn't get out of hand. So Portland, you know, we like to think of Portland as some bastion of liberal egalitarianism, but I think ask anybody who lives here and has to live with the subtle racism that exists here, and I think you'll find out it's a different story. Okay, then let's unpack the second part of what you said, which had to do with fear and the idea that fear is one of the foundations of racism. So this is, you know, we use this term homophobia, for example, to describe individuals who, for whatever reason, are prejudiced toward homosexuals. And so, you know, we sort of say fear, you know, as the phobia, the fear. So there, we have this intuitive notion that somehow fear is related to racism, prejudice, other isms, right? The question for social psychologists is, can we find a basis for actually making that assertion that there is some, that there is a fear component? And we'll talk about that too. And I forgot the third thing you said. There's a third. I was going to unpack.
Is most of the time rooted in fear, and fear is from what you don't understand, and you get to understand.
Okay.
And you get to know people's individuals.
Okay. So then the notion is that fear might be reduced by getting to know individuals who are in the feared group, perhaps. And then you might be able to then reduce your prejudice. That's a little more complicated than that. The contact hypothesis, as it's known, there are some other elements you need to do in addition to putting people just directly in contact with other people. Because what will happen typically in intergroup conflict, if you have a prejudice toward a member of another group and you get to know a member of that group and they turn out to be different than your prejudicial stereotypes, And they tend, you know, maybe you think all members of that group are stupid and lazy, and this person turns out to be, you know, motivated, bright, energetic. And you go, oh, well, of course, that person's an exception, right? So so there are other things we need to do to besides just contact, but we'll talk about that too. Okay, so then another notion would be that self-esteem is related to racism. And that seems like it would be a reasonably easy hypothesis to test. I haven't seen the data on that, but I'll tell you what, I'll actually look it up and see. And I'll bet you that there isn't an association, but because what we know of self-esteem.
You're saying there isn't an
association? I would suggest that there is not a correlation, but do you want to look at any particular type of prejudice or prejudice in general? Racism? Okay. I'll look up some, see if there's some data on that. I'm sure there probably is, and we'll see if there is a correlation. Carrie, did you have a comment? Okay. Anything else in comments to this? Yeah. Okay, good. Good. So bullying and prejudice. So self-esteem, bullying. And so we know there's a relationship between low self-esteem and bullying. So perhaps there's something related to both self-esteem and bullying that might be independent of self-esteem that might be related. And here's what I'll propose to you is the related factor. Because remember, we're talking about social psychology, so we're mostly interested in the effects of the situation on your behavior and your thinking. But there are individual differences that may account for that. Self-esteem may be one of them. And this is probably going to be the related individual difference. It's a variable known as social dominance orientation, or it's abbreviated SDO. And this research has been done mostly by Jim Sedanius at UCLA, I think. And social dominance orientation is an individual's tendency to like social hierarchies and to be able to know where they are in social hierarchies and create social hierarchies. So it's the idea, possibly, that this particular kind of individual prefers to live in societies that are hierarchical and perhaps segregated or divided. And that gives maybe them some sense of certainty about their social environment that they might be uncomfortable with the lack of certainty in a very egalitarian social environment. So this is an interesting variable that I'll talk a little bit about later. Yeah. Okay, so the rural environment, which may be more homogeneous, right? So you may have more people like you living around you. That may be comforting. Now, don't forget that in our evolutionary past, in our proto-hominid and early hominid periods, just after, when we were sort of nomads, One of the things to be aware of is the fact that other people that don't look like you are probably dangerous. So evolutionary psychologists suggest that one of the roots of prejudice is the idea that other people that don't look like you may be dangerous to your group. And so you have to be wary, and it creates this general sense of wariness of others who aren't like you. And that that helps explain, for example, in-group favoritism, out-group homogeneity, out-group bias. It also is supported by some research on, for example, in the lab that I worked in at UBC, we looked at perceived vulnerability to disease. Did I talk about this already? The idea, it's an individual difference variable, just like SDO. We abbreviate this PVD. And perceived vulnerability to disease can be measured basically by a questionnaire, which asks you things about how vulnerable you feel to getting contagious diseases. And people vary on PVD. And PVD predicts a number of prejudices. For example, a bizarre prejudice that you wouldn't think it would predict is anti-fat prejudice. And so you go, well, how can that help predict whether someone's going to be prejudiced toward fat people? Fat isn't a contagion, right? But turns out that there are some researchers now that are looking at a viral basis for obesity. So, we may actually discover that there is a viral basis to something like obesity, right? So maybe there is something to being wary of other individuals who may be carrying diseases, and someone who doesn't look like you is probably from, somewhere else, some other geographic area, because we have tended to be geographically isolated in our evolutionary past, and they may have developed immunity to diseases that you haven't developed because you haven't been exposed, right? So, someone who has the virus, sure, yeah. So there's a very, very interesting. There's some very interesting stuff we don't know about in terms of the relationship between things like prejudice and racism and other bigger kinds of beliefs, right? Any other comments on this?
I guess in a way it kind of surprises me where it happened in Medford, because West Medford is the most racially integrated area of Medford.
Okay.
It seems like something that would have happened elsewhere maybe, but...
But it's fairly likely that the individuals who perpetrated it may have been from that area, but they may also have been from somewhere else. And in fact, they may be people living there that resent the integration, right? So don't be surprised that racism is a pervasive part of our culture. From what we know about racism, really the best way to counteract it is education, basically becoming aware of your own tendency toward in-group favoritism, toward out-group homogeneity effects, the kinds of cognitive basis that we have for prejudice, stereotyping, and discrimination behaviors, okay? All right, so prejudice. That's a scary look, isn't it? She's like a robot or something. This is like, she must have gone to TV anchor school, and this is the face that they taught her, is the perfect bland face that, the concerned bland face, yes. All right, so prejudice. Here's what Aronson says about prejudice. Aronson says prejudice is a hostile or negative attitude toward a distinguishable group, that is a group that you can somehow identify, on the basis of generalizations, which are derived from information that is faulty or incomplete. I don't like this definition, and I'm going to propose a different typology for looking at this, but I'll go along with Aronson on this. At least if you see this on a multiple choice question in an exam, you probably should know that definition. And he'll say that prejudice has a cognitive component, which is stereotyping, an emotional component, which is some kind of a dislike that we have for individuals, and then a behavioral component, which we'll call discrimination. I'll propose that these things are independent, that they are not each components of prejudice, but they are their own processes, and prejudice is one of these three parts. I put prejudice in with the emotional component. Stereotyping I think of as more of a cognitive process, and then discrimination I think of as more of a behavioral process. But they're all related. They're all interrelated. They all affect each other. I just happen to think that it's better to think of them separately, right? Questions, comments on that? Okay. Oh, yeah.
When you said that about social dominance, I was thinking,
careful. I didn't say that this was inherited. I said it was an individual difference variable, but I didn't say that it was genetic or inborn. But go ahead.
Okay.
If they have a...
Okay, not inherent.
Okay. No, I didn't mean to imply that individuals that are high in SDO want to be at the top of the hierarchy. Rather, that they are comfortable in hierarchical and predictable situations. And where they are, as long as they, for example, here's another individual difference variable that we look at. Right-wing authoritarianism, which we abbreviate RWA. And right-wing authoritarianism, one of the characteristics of individuals who are high in right-wing authoritarianism is that they are more comfortable in situations where there is an identifiable authority figure. And I'll qualify that by saying an identifiable legitimate, what they consider a legitimate authority figure. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be the authority figure. These two things are related. It doesn't mean that they have to be the authority figure. It just means that they are more comfortable in a situation where there is an identifiable authority figure. Right. Okay, so let's look at each of these three components, stereotypes, prejudice, and discrimination. Now let's start with stereotypes. When I talk about stereotypes, I'm going to talk about the idea that we make generalizations about a member based on their group membership. So an individual, generalizations about an individual based on their group membership. So we all probably have some generalizations we hold of students. What are some generalizations you hold of students?
Motivated.
What's that? Ambitious. I tell you, I've had some students in my class that are neither motivated nor ambitious. But what other generalizations would you have? Especially if you weren't a student. Think about what you thought of students before you became a community college student, for example. Because it's more important to think of people outside your group, really, because this is where this mostly comes in. Okay.
So I thought, okay, they're either more empowered or, and there's something different now.
And they are comfortable engaging with instructors. There's a couple of things going on here. Partly that's a function of teaching style, because there are some teaching styles that don't encourage that. Also, it's a function of culture. There are many cultures where that's not acceptable to challenge or question the lecturer, yeah. But, you know, if you're in a big lecture hall, it would also be entirely different, too. So the situation, right? Okay, so what else? What do you think of yourselves? Here's what's interesting. You're having a hard time coming up with generalizations because you're trying to describe your own group. And you think of your own group as being very, very diverse, very heterogeneous.
Well, when I was in high school and I was thinking about college, we went so grown up and responsible, and then I went to a big university my freshman year, and I was like, wow, this is just like high school, you're all babies.
So,
why am I paying this much money to go to high school again?
So in high school, you had this stereotype of college students as being very studious, very immature, and then you get there and all of a sudden you realize that some of them are like that, but a lot of them are not like that. Yeah. Yeah. I hope that you find a larger proportion of students here who are more generally more motivated than the university. Yeah, that's one reason I enjoy teaching at community colleges is I generally have students that have, for whatever reason, have had challenges in their lives, and they're the kind of people who like challenge and who like to meet challenge and who are more motivated in general for whatever, you know, for a variety of reasons. So you consider students a relatively heterogeneous. Yeah, go ahead, Remy. Sure. So you all, you know, a lot of you have jobs, a lot of you have, you know, things outside. But those students at the university, they're all partiers and, you know, mommy and daddy's boys and girls and, right? Yeah, go ahead.
Whenever he showed up, college boy, he so they looked up to anybody that was a college student as being somebody who thought themselves as superior.
Okay. So individuals who, for whatever reason, whether it's choice or circumstance, haven't gone to college, see individuals who are in or have gone to college as somehow different from them, you know, somehow, you know, maybe self-important or, you know, self-involved or somehow there's some derisiveness. And so we see this, for example, in the rhetoric of division that we had in the Democratic Party, this notion of, for example, Barack Obama being seen as elite somehow. You know, he went to Harvard and, you know, he was a lawyer and he actually speaks eloquently and with good diction and vocabulary, as opposed to perhaps individuals who may see that as somehow phony or somehow, you know, derisive. You know, they have this stereotype, this prejudice, right? So this stuff exists on all kinds of different levels. So what generalizations would you make about, for example, a group Asian American students, I'm sorry.
Smart.
Yeah. Good at math. What else?
Determined.
Very hardworking.
Introverted,
right? So these are persistence. So these are kind of generalizations that we form, not so much based on our own experience with individuals. Where do we get that, do you suppose? Okay, what about if we even define a specific category of Asian American students? I'm picking Asian American students not for any particular reason, but just because it's convenient. Wealthy Asian American students. What kind of characteristics would you associate with wealthy Asian American students? And how might you differentiate between wealthy and poor? What's that?
He's got a super or
something. He's got a nice car. What did you call it?
A Toyota Supra.
Some sort of, you know, souped up kind of nice car. And lazy.
Trendy.
Does a particular gender come to mind when you think of this? Do you think male or female or generally both? What's that?
Both, I think.
Both, okay. And so we've got these ideas that are based mostly on stereotypes, right? Not necessarily information that we have from direct, you know, contact with a large number of individuals in this group, but probably information that we're receiving mostly secondhand.
Not all media.
Not always, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Parents, you know, their parents make them stay at home instead of going to a party because they need to practice their piano.
Yeah. So there may be, for example, some influences, some cultural influences in, say, first or second generation Asian American students. But I would suggest that as you get more and more generations removed from the emigration, that you'll see some similarities. So assimilation. Yeah. All overweight. Uh-oh.
Well, not all. Okay.
So we've got these kind of stereotypes, these notions, and I'm going to suggest that these generalizations are based mostly on prototypes, which I'll suggest also is the foundation for stereotypes. What is a prototype? a model, right? If you're going to invent something, right, a lot of times you'll build a prototype, which is an example of the thing you're going to invent. Oftentimes it's a functional prototype, you know, it actually has all the features of what you're going to invent. And when we think about prototypes in terms of human cognition, we tend to think of what we call exemplars, individual instances of a group of things that come to mind. So when I say, for example, Asian American students, you probably have an image that kind of pops into your mind relatively quickly. When I say student, you probably have an image, you know, and it's got certain things. It looks like it's got a backpack, or it's got books under its arm, or, you know, it's got a college shirt on, or who knows. You know, we all have different prototypes of these things. And prototypes are really useful things. They help us get by in our cognitive processes. And I'm not, you know, I'm going to focus on social cognition, but these are topics that are generally studied in cognition in general. Okay, so let's take a look at one particular form of categorization. This is, you know, this is just an example. You don't have to copy this down. This is just an example. So take a look at this. What's a square shape? Okay, so it's got two sides and two tops, right? And they're equal lengths. And so when I say, what's a square, you probably think of something like that. So then if I say, what is a diamond shape, what do you think of? It's got points on the top and bottom and the sides, right? And so unless you're thinking of the gem itself and not geometry, you probably think of something shaped like that. So then, what's that? A diamond? What's that? A diamond or a square? What's that? So they're really just instances of the same thing, but this we consider more like a diamond. We would call this a tilted diamond, and we would probably call this a tilted square, right? So the closer something gets to a particular prototype that we have of something, the more we consider it like that thing, right? In fact, if I put this image over here, you would probably definitely call this a square because it's in juxtaposition to this image too, right? So we have these ways of kind of figuring out what things are, and we look for certain characteristics that are prototypical of a particular category. So the prototypical characteristics of this category are points on the tops and the sides, and this is more like something that's pointed on the top and the sides, as opposed to a square, which has, you know, flat sides and tops, right? But they're really just the same thing. So this is just one example of sort of how we try to sort things out. You know, in our mental, in our way of thinking, we are built to kind of find patterns and to sort things into groups and categories. And this is what we do. And this is probably, you know, one of the things that has allowed us to survive and thrive to the degree that we have. Okay, so that's categorization. I'm going to talk next about getting into more, bringing this into the realm more of social cognition. It's 10 of, why don't we just take a break before we get into this. So if you want to come back about noon, that'll be good. So, social cognition.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, I'm.
So just because, because I know you, like, people always say that just because it's a stereotype doesn't mean it's not true.
Right.
So if a stereotype's true, is it still a prejudice?
That's why I like to differentiate between prejudice and stereotyping. We think of prejudice as generally being some sort of negative feeling that we have toward a member of a group. That negative, you know, that negative feeling, if it's from a, you know, a stereotype, by definition, a stereotype is really something that, that we hold as a product of lack of information or lack of experience with the group. So by that definition, there are no real sort of true stereotypes. There are, then it's just information about the group. However, if you think, based on the fact that 80% of people who are Oregonian believe in fairies, if you think that everybody in Oregon believes in fairies as a, you know, as a result of that knowledge, then that's obviously an untrue stereotype. Yeah. So stereotypes we generally think of as, you know, it's when you think that all members of a group or the typical member of the group is going to be like that. And, you know, that, you know, in some cases that could be true. But again, then we start getting into the idea that stereotypes typically tend to be negative attributions that we make. So one of the things that I talked a little bit about was this notion of prototypes. And in cognition, a prototype is some sort of image or idea or maybe properties that we think of as typical of a broad group of individuals, okay? So when we talk about this in cognition, for example, we usually use the example of bird. What's your prototype of a bird? You could probably draw it. If I could look in your head, I could see the image. But what does the image look like to you, or the concept, or the idea? What's that? It has a beak. Has wings. What's that?
A tail.
Feathers. What does it do?
Flies.
And so those are the sort of average or most frequent attributes of birds. The problem comes when we think of bird and then we think of penguin, which is a bird. And penguins don't fly. Their feathers are very short, and they don't look like feathers. And they don't really have a tail, you know. They don't sit in trees. They don't sing, you know. They have a lot of attributes that are not like our prototype of birds. So then we have to change our schema, right? Either we have to say, we keep the schema, you remember schemas? We keep the schema of birds, which is true to the prototype we have, and say penguins aren't birds, they're something else. Or we modify the schema to say, oh, some birds walk on the ground, walk on the ice, you know, don't really have feathers, they don't fly, they swim, right? So now we're modifying the schema. So we are going through these processes of changing our social cognition, changing our cognitive processes to become more inclusive, right? So the concept of bird then starts to include some things that aren't typical of a prototypical bird. Aren't typical of a prototypical? aren't like a prototypical bird. Okay. The nice thing about prototypes is they allow us to think quickly and make quick decisions. And sometimes we've got to make a quick decision. You know, I always say, if I'm walking down a trail at night and, you know, it's dusk and getting a little dark, and I see a shadow of something that looks like it's furry and it's got two pointy ears and eyes that are shining, you know, maybe reflecting the light, I'm not going to stop and figure out whether it's a furry little tabby cat or it's a mountain lion. I'm going to run and get the heck out of there, right? So that prototype is useful for me for making those quick decisions of what to do, maybe in a dangerous or threatening situation. Okay, so here's some categories, concepts I'd like you to think about, and think of the prototype that comes to mind. Woman, you get a prototype. What are the characteristics of the prototype? What's that? I didn't hear that. Boobs, breasts, what else? Soft. What's that?
Soft.
It's soft. If you can get close enough to touch it. I won't go there. Okay. Oh, you weren't talking about the breasts themselves. Okay. Sorry. No, I'm just joking. I just made that up. I knew you weren't. Okay, so what else?
Drama.
So emotional ability, you know, hysterical, right? Hysterical. You know where the term...
Was that historical?
You know where the term hysteria comes from?
Yeah.
You do. Those of you who have been in my classes. Hysteria when medicine was being developed by the Greeks, they were trying to explain some bizarre behaviors. And one of the behaviors that they were trying to explain was this kind of upset, anxious, hysterical, screaming kind of behavior. And the way that they explained it was that the uterus had become dislodged and had begun wandering around the abdomen and started making trouble for the individual's body, and so, and that term remains to this day. So, yeah, it was a male physician, as a matter of fact. But it was perpetrated later by Freud, which is not much better. Okay, so, so soft, it has breasts, it has emotional lability. What else? Shorter. Curves.
Strong.
What's that?
Strong.
Okay.
Long hair.
So if you were to see some sort of shadowy figure that had long hair and boobs, well, you wouldn't be able to see that it was soft, but and it was emotionally labile, and it was Amazonian, right? Strong. You would say, oh, that's a woman. Okay. So these are the concepts, the ideas, right? You know, part of my concept of woman has to do with the dress. You know, I happen to see women in dresses, right? So, but that is regardless of the fact that most women don't wear dresses now, but that's left over from a long time ago, right? So so these are ways of picking up on individuals in our environment. Why do we need to know what category they're in, or what concept they are? What's useful about knowing the category membership of this individual? You know how to behave toward it, around it. You know whether to be submissive or dominant. You know whether to, whether to be afraid of it, right? Or whether it should fear you, and if it doesn't, you're gonna beat it over the head until it does, right? So these are ways of understanding how we're going to interact with individuals in our environment. Transvestite, what are the prototypes?
Lots of
makeup. What's that? It has a dress on, okay. And it's a man. Okay, so one of the characteristics, yeah, I do, you know, I look at a lot of, I guess I shouldn't say I look at a lot of transvestites, but it was bad, huh? I taught human sexuality, so I had to do some research. Yes, that's it. I had to do research into transvestites. And so one of the characteristics is their hands for men and women are quite different. It's interesting we didn't mention that with women. It's only when we start seeing something that's disjuncted, right, that it's got a dress on, but it's got hands that don't look like a woman's hands, right? Okay, so these are characteristics we're going to use. Now, it's interesting that you said that it's a man dressed in a woman's dress? Okay, but women can be transvestites too. But we don't think of that. That's because it's not prototypical. You know, in fact, there are probably a fair number of women here that are dressed in what might be considered men's clothes, but we don't call them transvestites because it's more acceptable in this culture for women to wear men's clothes than it is for men to wear women's clothes, right? Okay. All right. How about this one? Terrorist. What's the prototype? Nobody wants to say it. 9/11. Middle Eastern, 9/11. What are the prototypical characteristics? Crazy, extreme, scary. Scary, did you say? Or scared? Scary, okay. What else? I get a beard, right? So highly fundamentalist, religious, extremist, yeah. Okay. But looking at the individual, you wouldn't know that, maybe. But certainly post 9/11, and in fact, I'll suggest that even pre 9/11, September 11th attacks, the idea of a Middle Eastern man typically comes to mind for terrorist. And so, where's all this stuff come from? Okay, so images we see in our environment, television, maybe newspapers, magazines, right? The people around us. Okay, so our sense of self may influence it. Sure. What else? Where else does this stuff come from? Where else is it communicated to us? So the authorities in the culture. So cultural authorities, maybe political authorities? Religious authorities, family authorities, but not necessarily just authorities and families, right? Peers, siblings, right? This idea of prototypes, you know, all of this information is coming in and we're categorizing it and sorting it and figuring out what the most typical attributes are of a particular category of things. And so we're doing this constantly and we're getting this information from all over the place. In addition to prototypes, the next level up from prototypes is the idea of concepts or categories. And a concept is like a categorization of groups of things that's based on a prototype. Okay? So when I think of the category of birds, I get particular prototypical examples that fall out into categorical concepts. So the concept of bird, my concept of bird, for example, includes the prototype of the songbird in the tree and the penguin. So it doesn't necessarily mean that these concepts are going to be simple or these categories are going to be simple. They may have multiple prototypes, right? But when we look at something, we generally know what it is. And it's relying mostly on the prototype. So if I say African as a concept, what comes to mind? Black person, right? What else comes to mind? African. Clothing. So what particular? Bright colors, stripes, zigzags. What else? What's that?
Cornrows.
Oh, braids, like cornrows. Yes, so hairstyle, right? So the concept of African is now not just prototype individuals, but it's got all kinds of prototypes that are being activated here, right? I think of, when I think African, I think African masks, you know, the wooden African masks and the shields and things. That's one of the things that comes to mind, right? So there's culture and all kinds of stuff that's activated by this category. Asian. What are the prototypes? What's that?
Mothballs.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting. I wonder what that's from. Oh. No, I mean, yeah, no, but I mean, I wonder where is it part of cooking, or is it, I don't know, I wonder. That's probably, maybe just a individual who likes to chew on mothballs or something. What else? Asian. What kind of prototypes? What's that? Huh? Ninja? What else? Chopsticks? What else?
Interior design.
Computer skills. Math, smart, right? All that stuff we talked about before. Caribbean. Rhythm, ocean, steel drums, what's that? Good weather, Bob Marley, reggae, right? So when we think of these concepts, we get, it's like little bursts of prototypes that come to us, right? Southerner, redneck, fried chicken, what's that? Southern Belle, very genteel. Debutante, what's that? Drawl, like the accent you mean is drawl. Drinking. Northerner. Birkenstocks. You don't know a lot of the Northerners, I know. Birkenstocks and tofu. Okay, what else? Reserved. Spontaneous. Hunting, hunter, okay. What's that? Terse. Okay. And what's interesting is, you know, when we say Northerner after we say Southerner, we might get Birkenstocks and tofu, but maybe not if we put those in juxtaposition, right? So sometimes these things come as a product of comparing. You know, what's the sort of opposite of redneck, southern, ribs, and hunting boots, right? Tofu and Birkenstocks, maybe. Okay. Republican. What's that? Conservative. Old white men. Current, you know, considering that the prototype Republican right now is a 71-year-old candidate for presidency. What's that? Yeah, yeah. What else? Republican. Dr. Laura Schlesinger. What's that?
Texas.
I think cigars. I think fat, you know, obese. Suits, you know, people in these big suits, you know, smoking cigars and making deals, right? Democrat. Birkenstocks. Now we're back to the Birkenstocks. Okay, so this is interesting. Texas, Republican, Northern Birkenstocks, right? Okay, Democrats. Okay, what else?
Athletic.
Okay. 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 What else? Whiny. Good. Good. I appreciate that. Yeah. What's that? Outdoorsy. What's that? Younger. Okay. So these are sort of, even though they're relatively complex, right? These are not just one characteristic we're thinking of when we think of these concepts. They're complex concepts, but they tend to be very restrictive for the people in that group and really don't apply all that well to people in that group, most likely. Okay. Although I did live in the South, and you're pretty much right on that one. But so let me do a little exercise here. I kind of tried to sort these or shuffle them, so let's see if they don't come out in clumps. I'm going to give you a sheet of paper, and I want you to write some characteristics of these individuals that you might think of. Oops, already got too many of those. No. But I would like you to also indicate what kind of car you drive, whether it is, whether it's similar to the car that you've gotten on the sheet. Or truck. Having fun with that, huh? I do not. I guess I must be. Maybe I'm prototypical. Oops. Okay, so what I gave you was you each have a different car, and I wanted you to list some characteristics of people who drive those cars. A Volkswagen, a Chevy pickup truck, and a Cadillac. I didn't specify what kind of Volkswagen or Cadillac, but. So who got the Volkswagens? What are your characteristics?
It's a hippie.
Hippie.
Kind of a Volkswagen, though.
Okay.
Yeah, the hippie, but then there's the Jetta.
Yeah.
And then there's the...
Okay. Well, what did you put down?
Well, I divided it into three different categories.
Oh. Is there any commonality between the categories? Okay. What else? So give me some of yours. Yeah.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, for the VW bus. Hippie.
What? Okay. So yeah, there was some commonality.
That's just for the bus.
Okay. Well, what else?
Oh, for the bug, I put young or middle-aged woman, flower at the dash. Oh, that'd be inactive.
Okay. Active.
And in the Jetta, I put speed, young, high energy. We have a turbo version of that.
Okay. So speed. What else? Yeah.
I feel
I'll just fold that into hippie. What's that? White.
Slow drivers, people concerned about safety.
In the Volkswagen?
Yeah.
Well, that's really antithetical to the idea of speed, huh? Interesting. What else? What else you got for Volkswagen? Anything different? Okay. What else? Yeah. Stubborn. Okay. Interesting. Are you sure you're not just describing Germans? No, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. What else? Anything else? Okay. What about a Chevy pickup truck?
Outdoors.
What else?
Farmer.
A Chevy or younger?
Chevy is usually
versus Ford. What else?
I mean, kind of people that like stuff built in the USA.
Okay, so USA made. Okay. What's that? Huh? Somebody else? Okay. Less conservative than Ford drivers?
Chevy truck. I managed the tire center for 5 years. So I got to talk.
So there's a real dichotomy between Ford and Chevy. So you've got some real intense conceptual formations based on Ford and Chevy.
To guess who drove what before.
Interesting. You were able to do it pretty well.
Yeah, and I got pretty good at it.
Except for the hindsight bias. Gotta be careful about that. What else? Chevy pickup truck, who else had that?
Texan.
They don't
have to haul as many people around. Smaller family or single.
Unless they're hauling them around in the back.
Sure. Which is fun, but in the city you don't see
it. Yeah. Yeah, you know, if you lived in Texas, it would be no problem. Here there's a law against it probably, but what else? What's it? I'm sorry, what'd you say? Working class. Oh, I hate that term. You know, we've got in the current political discourse, there's this whole thing of Hillary Clinton appealing to the working class. And it's like, hello, I work. Like, what is working? You know, what they really want to say is poor folks. Right? I'll probably be considered a poor folk, really. What's that? Country music, okay. Southern. White. male. Yeah, it's changing. Yeah, it's becoming more. A little girl in a big pickup truck. Bring it on. Yeah. All right. Now you know where my predilections go. Cadillac, what do you got? Grandma and Grandpa driving the lowrider. What else? So we got upper class, old gangster, grandparents, slow lowrider. What else? White. She's gonna have sex with her car or something. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's weird, huh? Whatever turns you on. What's that?
Luxury.
We'll say. What else? Well, if it's a lowrider, what ethnic group would you associate with lowriders? Latinos. Okay, so let's see what we got. For Volkswagen, we got hippie girls that are young, that are into activity and speed, and they're white hippie girls that are young, they also enjoy going slow, but they like to have fun and party, and they're kind of stubborn. Okay? All right. So it's kind of hard to take everybody's concepts, you know, everybody's prototypes and concepts and stick them together, because now we're starting to see maybe a little diversity, right? Chevy pickup truck, outdoorsy, farming, work truck, younger and less conservative than Ford drivers. They're like people that like things made in the United States. They're Texans. They have smaller families, or maybe they're single. Working class folks like to listen to country music. And they might be a southern Texan white male. Okay? And for the Cadillac, we get upper class, old gangster grandparents who like driving their lowriders slowly. While they're working as a pimp, and they become blacks and Latinos sometimes, and they like luxury. Okay, so what's interesting here? Which of the three is sort of the most kind of diverse? The Cadillac, which you would think, I would think, would be the one that we have the most sort of rigid stereotypes about. So it depends on your age. Yeah. So my grandfather, he never drove anything but a Cadillac. So the MTV generation maybe sees Cadillacs a little differently. So our conceptions, our prototypes, our ideas about things are going to be vastly influenced by not only our own personal experience with my grandfather, but our perception that's based on media and influences from outside the individual. And this is all going to tie back into one of the heuristics we talked about in social cognition, the availability heuristic and the representativeness heuristic, right? The availability heuristic, meaning what comes most easily to mind when you think of a Cadillac, right? Those are like the prototypes, right? The representativeness heuristic, meaning if I think of a Cadillac, let's say I see an older person, and what's most representative of the car that they drive? It's probably a Cadillac based on our listing here, right? So the representativeness of heuristic and availability heuristic are going to guide these concepts and the prototypes that come to mind when we think of groups of people, okay? So we've got prototypes, we've got concepts or categories. I use those terms interchangeably. And so now, what about stereotypes? How do stereotypes fit in here? If we say, according to, what was the definition that Aronson used? He doesn't talk about, he talks about prejudice. So a stereotype, what's a stereotype? Where does the word come from, do you know? It was a printing term originally. But now we use it more in the context of intergroup perception. So it's a stereotype.
To assign identical characteristics to any person in the group regardless of the actual variation
from them. Okay, so Aronson says to assign identical characteristics to individuals of a group regardless of their actual variation. So the idea here is that groups have variation, right? Volkswagen owners aren't all hippies. They're not all girls. They're not all young. They're not all into activity and speed. But we assign those characteristics as a stereotype representation of those things. It helps us identify the category that this person is in.
Have you ever done a study on that?
Of which? Oh hell yeah. You know that the marketers know exactly who they're selling to. Right. But they're more complex than we generally think of, right? Because stereotypes are generally simple ideas that we have of people. So fundamentally they are the beliefs and attitudes that we hold toward members of a group. Again, based on incomplete or maybe incorrect information. But stereotypes are based now on the concepts and the prototypes that make up those concepts. Right? So we've got prototypes, then we've got concepts, which are sort of gatherings of prototypes. And then we've got stereotypes, which feed directly out of categories and prototypes, or concepts and prototypes. And as I said, they generally tend to be based on either incomplete or inaccurate information. Yeah, well, that's what business does. You know, it does what people buy, right? The first time I ever saw espresso in a McDonald's was in Seattle, right? So maybe it's part of that group's identity, but the marketers are going to sell whatever sells there. Okay, now. Remember our friend, the out-group homogeneity effect. Anybody want to summarize the out-group homogeneity effect?
It's the idea that everyone not in your group is more similar than they really are, but like
Okay.
Everyone outside is just the same.
Okay. When you talk about someone in your group, you call them an in-group member. Outside your group, you call them an out-group member. Right. So, the out-group homogeneity effect has to do with seeing individuals that are members of out-groups as being much more similar to each other than people in your in-group who you think of as heterogeneous rather than homogeneous or homogeneity, right? And so we have this tendency to form up these groups, us and them. If you're not with us, you're with the terrorists, right? Remember George Bush's State of the Union speech? So this allows us a lot of behavior that we wouldn't normally get away with. When we say they are bad, now we can start acting against them in certain ways. Okay. All right, so here's one of my favorite cartoons. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to just say, and this gets into the notion of attributions. We make attributions about out-group members based on very limited information and based on the idea that they are much more homogeneous than they really are. Okay? So we will make attributions about Volkswagen drivers, assuming... Oh, did anybody get the car that they actually drive? Darn, okay. So when we make attributions about Volkswagen members, they tend to be these... We tend to see them as relatively homogeneous groups of individuals rather than very heterogeneous. You know, we don't see Volkswagen owners as, you know, old... what was it? Upper-class old gangster grandparents who drive their lowriders very slowly through the black Latino neighborhoods while they're pimping out their prostitutes, yeah. Their children, their grandchildren. Yikes! Where did that come from? Sounds like a nightmare movie in progress or something. All right. We might actually have a sitcom in there. I'm going to take credit as creator. I inspired you all to create that. All right, ready? So here's my Tom the Dancing Bug, in case you can't see it in the back there. On the distant planet of Thamboria, people were always at war. You purple-skinned menace, you northwestern monster. Generations of bloodshed threatened the very species. It's regrettable but necessary, but I have to launch this nuclear attack. The planet's leaders and scientists conceived a bold plan. Wars are caused by an innate sense of belonging to one group, and thus a fear and hatred of other groups. We'll create a new generation of identical clones without nation or race. We'll even give them numbers instead of names. When the old generation died off and was replaced by the clone generation, there was peace. After you, 2214, 376, 717, 191. Thank you, 739, 974, 347, 899. Until, hey, you took my parking spot. Oh, you even numbers are all the same. Which led to more regrettable but necessary wars. You even-numbered fanatic, you odd-numbered animal. So the next generation didn't even get numbers. After you, thank you, which worked for a while. But, of course, it didn't last long. Your Zeisingst is on my lawn. Oh, I know your type. You were hatched from a blue clone pod, weren't you? So it goes. Not a very sort of hopeful idea about, stereotyping outgroup homogeneity and our ability to rise above that. But this has been the story for millennia. Right? So there's something about humans that makes us do this stuff. And it's unfortunately really awful. Okay, we're about out of time. Any questions in the minute we have left?
I was just going to say
Sure. 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 So a lot of that, a lot of sort of intra-group infighting is a product of power. You know, people want power, and the way that they have found that has gotten them power in the past has been killing other people. So, all right, so we'll catch you on Tuesday. Have a good weekend.